Welcome to Bedford County Speaks, a weekly public affairs program that introduces you to the work, lives, and lifestyles in Bedford County. Today's program over News Talk 1310 WBFD is hosted by Lloyd Roach. Bedford County Speaks is heard every Saturday at this time. Now let's join Lloyd for this week's discussion on Bedford County Speaks.
Thank you, Matt DeFazio, and good morning to you. Welcome to Bedford County Speaks, the weekly public affairs program over News Talk 1310 WBFD. Today's program is presented as a public service by Thomas Chevrolet Subaru, right here on Route 220 in Bedford. That's Thomas, saving you time, money, and worry for over 100 years. I'll return in a moment with today's guest, Jen Ford, when Bedford County Speaks continues.
Sometime back, they did a survey and they found that lots of people who lived within a few miles of the Liberty Bell or the Statue of Liberty never visited either place. That happens around here too. Just after the start of the French and Indian War, Bedford County became the gateway to the West with the opening of the Forbes Road, which we now call Route 30. In 1794, President George Washington had to come here to quell the Whiskey Rebellion. By 1913, the first transcontinental road for motor cars, the Lincoln Highway, was dedicated here, and the legendary Bedford Springs Resort still welcomes people from all over the world. With this kind of legacy, why keep it a secret? Spread the word about Bedford County, the history, the charm, and the regal Alleghenies. Bedford County, America's open door to the West.
Well, we have a neat program for you this morning. Number one, because it's about two of some of my favorite things, museums and cookies. But first, we're going to cover the museum half, and then I'll tell you about the cookie half later. Our guest is Jen Ford, actually, to be specific, Dr. Jennifer Ford. You may know Jen. She operates the Alpaca Shop right here in downtown Bedford and has about 18 or 19 different volunteer organizations that she's involved in as well. But the one we're going to talk about that she is involved in, both professionally and from a volunteer side, is the Fort Bedford Museum. So, Jen, thanks very much for taking the time to talk to us. I really appreciate it.
Oh, thank you, Lloyd.
I want to talk a little bit about Fort Bedford. We did a program about a year ago with you folks about the Heritage Trust, and I think people need to know more about the museum itself, the physical museum. If you've been in Bedford for any length of time, I've been here 3 years, but some people have been here for 300 years, know about the original Fort Bedford, but I don't think they know a whole lot about the museum itself. So I thought you might be a good place to start because you're the curator. Can you just kind of give me a little sketch of why they built this museum in the first place?
The community of Bedford built the museum in 1958 to commemorate the 200th anniversary of the building of the original fort in 1758 by General Forbes and his troops during the French and Indian War. So it really is very, very special place because it is completely built by volunteer community members with supplies and materials provided by community members. It was a point of great pride and excitement here 60 years ago. And from that time until this, the museum itself has been run, staffed quite lovingly by volunteers from the community. So it's been a community project and at the heart of this community and its heritage for quite some time, literally for generations.
And this facility for several years has heretofore been operated by the Borough of Bedford, right?
The Borough of Bedford owns the property and all of the artifacts therein. Uh-huh. And they have had oversight on the management of the museum. They've usually had a paid director plus a staff of volunteer docents.
Right.
And that changed in 2014 when the Bedford Heritage Trust, founded by Steve George, approached the borough and asked them if they would be interested in turning management and curation over to the trust, primarily to bring the museum up to date, to bring a bit more of a professional eye, and some much-needed freshening and changes to the museum.
Well, in a minute, we're going to learn just how much of a change they did make. This Heritage Trust outfit, they've really improved the museum dramatically, and we're going to talk a bit about that in a second. Our guest is Jen Ford. Jen, you in addition to operating your marvelous alpaca shop, have a substantial academic background. Is your PhD in history?
Or it is.
Something else? In history?
It is.
And where'd you go to school?
University of Pittsburgh.
Okay.
Yes.
Good.
I went all the way through. I started as a midlife freshman in the mid-1980s just to take a class, and I couldn't stop. And finally, a decade later, they gave me a PhD and shoved me out the door.
I didn't have that problem in school. I could stop very easily, actually.
Oh, I couldn't stop. I'd be a perennial student if I could manage
great.
It.
Well, what a wonderful thing that we have here in Bedford to have a person with your talents and ability to
that's
do this.
That's very kind of you.
And I have been through the museum recently, and if you have not been there in a year or so, you definitely have to come back. There's a new museum awaiting you there. They're in the process of making some major changes and already have. Jen, the big one was what you did with the back storage room. The back storage room became
an actual interpretive museum.
Yeah,
indeed.
Tell me about that.
Indeed.
What's that look like?
Well, since the museum had been for decades run quite well by amateurs, by volunteers, history buffs, they did the very, very best they could with virtually no budget and a love of history, but perhaps not any expertise in the field of museum studies. So they collected and cared for and protected a total of 5,000, if you include 3,000 Native American artifacts, objects down there at the museum, but things were simply put into display cases. It was a very classic mid-20th century museum setup.
Right.
You put things in cases. Sometimes you group them together by theme or story, sometimes not. So when we came in, for 20 years, I made my living as a museum consultant, and that was my job. I was the part of the team. We would go into museums all over Pennsylvania that were in much the same state as we found the Fort Bedford Museum, and assist them to turn it from what we call an object-centered museum, which is simply the display of objects, to an object-driven museum that is using objects as the starting point from which to tell stories. So we cataloged, I brought in a team of professionals, and I certainly did not do this all by myself. We cataloged the collection so that we knew what we had, really got our arms around what was in there, and then began in the back room to show really people what we could do and put together a team. Michael Coral, who owns Locality Gallery, happens to be a highly trained museum design exhibit designer and fabricator. Mm. I'm glad I'm here, but without Michael, none of what we've done has happened, because Michael has the connections, the talent, the ability to put together an exhibit in the back room. The exhibit in the back room, had it been done in real world, is a $300,000 exhibit. Mm. We managed to pull it off for less than $50,000 because of Michael's talent, Mary Pat Bean, who did the graphics for us. So when you go into the back room now, instead of just hundreds of square feet, 1,400 square feet of cases of objects, now it tells the story of Bedford. The exhibit is actually called Becoming Bedford. We start in the mid-18th century, wrap our way around the room, and end in the early 20th century. The feature, the centerpiece of the room, is the Civil War field gun that used to be in the transportation room. Now it's the heart and the soul of the new exhibit. So people who have been to the museum before and then come back and see what we've done are pretty flabbergasted by what they see.
Well, I really have no expertise in museums other than a visitor, but in my work in radio over the years, I've had the pleasure of interviewing many people and visiting dozens of museums. And when I first saw what you did in there, it reminded me of one that I was involved with most recently called Winter Tour in Wilmington, Delaware.
I'm not worthy.
let me tell you why I saw the comparison. Winter Tour, obviously, is a museum that celebrated the life and fortune of Henry DuPont.
Mm-hmm.
And everybody in Wilmington is named DuPont somewhere along the line.
Right.
So, but his 1,000-acre estate is centered around flora and fauna. The whole business in Winter Tour is about the growing things. So when I walked into your little back room there. The layout seemed very similar to what they do inside of Winterthur, the way they identify things, the way they're laid out. And I thought, well, shucks, you know, in Bedford, if it's getting to look a little bit like a Winterthur exhibit, they're doing okay. So that was my own unprofessional observation. So what is your plan to do another room like that? And it's kind of grow kind of toward the front door? Is that how it's going to go?
Yes.
Something like that?
Our strategy was to begin with the back room. Most of the artifacts at the museum are from the 19th and early 20th century. Even though it's Fort Bedford Museum, that was the collection that was amassed over the last several decades. So we decided to take those artifacts and use them to showcase what the team is capable of. And then that would allow us to go to funding organizations and say, look at what we can do with more grants and funding and donations. We can do more.
Yeah, so, isn't it interesting? People only want to fund winners. So you need to look like a winner to go
right
in front of the
place. Which is why we really, we took a leap of faith. The borough took a leap of faith. The Heritage Trust took a leap of faith. We did the back room. Now, this past year, the 2016 season, we have started in, as you enter the blockhouse, the original room in the museum, the entire left-hand side is now the Native American. Right. We are smack in the middle of building that, the exact same team, although a very important member of this team is Suzanne Trussell, who's a highly trained archaeologist. She did the interpretation and the script for this. So we are going to open the 2017 season in April with this wonderful new Native American interpretive exhibit. The next phase in our very ambitious plan is to, and we waited to finish off with this, the interpretive museum of the Fort Bedford Museum and the French and Indian War. We want that part of the museum to be absolutely spectacular.
Yeah.
Therefore, we need considerable funding. So we're going to spend the winter beginning our fundraising for that. And so within 3 to 4 years, we will have redone virtually the entire museum.
Our guest is Jen Ford, who is the curator, among other things, but she is the curator of the Fort Bedford Museum in Bedford, right at the end of Juliana Street. If you go down there, if you go too far, you'll walk right into the river. So this is a great little spot. We're going to be back, and when we come back, we're going to learn about the future plans for the museum. We're going to learn about how you can help them, and we're going to talk about cookies.
Yay!
When Bedford County Speaks continues.
Hello, I'm Mark Thomas. Perhaps while driving around Bedford County lately, you may have noticed our current outdoor billboards. Stephanie March, general manager of Thomas Chevrolet Subaru, knows better than anyone about our mission of total satisfaction. When we talk about our 7 ways to save, we mean not only are we saving you money, but also saving you some time and aggravation. Our attention to complete satisfaction makes sure you're happy with our vehicles and service, which keeps us happy to have a loyal customer. Our 7 ways to save is a process to ensure you have complete information to make the decision that's best for you when you purchase a car or truck. We encourage you to visit Thomas Chevrolet Subaru right here in Bedford and see for yourself why our goal is your complete satisfaction. Visit us on Business Route 220 north of Bedford or visit us 24/7 online at thomaschevrolet.com.
This is Sharon McNamara of Bedford County Drug and Alcohol Prevention Partnership, and you're listening to Bedford County Speaks over News Talk 1310 WBFD.
Now, let's head back to today's Bedford County Speaks.
The Fort Bedford Museum, as I mentioned, is right at the end of Juliana Street. Pretty easy to find. All you have to do is start going down the hill, and when you get to the bottom, park, because that's where it is. If you're in Bedford or been around Bedford at all, you'll certainly know where it is. But, you know, I have found that when I've lived in certain places, some of the most famous places on earth are ignored by the local people.
Mm,
so
true.
This is not unusual. For example, Jen, my son lives in New York City. He tells me that half of the New Yorkers have never seen the Statue of Liberty.
Well, no, it's a tourist trap.
So that's right.
Yeah,
so that's why you should always
there's a certain cachet in not having
as a native Philadelphian. I remember talking to people and saying to them, well, when's the last time you saw the Liberty Bell? And they said, oh, no, third grade trip.
You third know, grade,
exactly. Yeah, something like that.
That's when people have gone to Fort Bedford
Museum. So we got to get you there again for your third grade trip.
Yes.
How can people help? Is there any way that maybe someone has an artifact of some kind, maybe even related to the Indians, mm-hmm. that could help the fort in any ways, or any ideas like that?
Sure. We're coming down the home stretch on the Native American exhibit, so unless you have an out-of-the-ballpark sort of object, I think we're okay on Native American artifacts. However, we are now in the design phase for the French and Indian War Fort Bedford Museum side. You know, that won't really get rolling for another year.
So things like that might be of interest to you, but you have to be careful, I guess, in a museum environment, don't you?
Right. We will be keenly interested in anything pertaining to the 18th century. The settlement period, French and Indian War, Revolutionary War, Whiskey Rebellion. If anybody has an artifact or a document pertaining to that period, we would be enormously interested in talking with you, at least photographing the object, and perhaps even working with you to arrange for a loan of the object on display in our new exhibit that'll hopefully be opening in 2018. Now, I will say parenthetically that the museum is in the main no longer accepting more modern artifacts. We have plenty of objects dating from the late 19th and early 20th century. Yeah. So we have an accession policy in place now, which pretty much says that we're interested in the earlier period.
And I understand that. You don't have 200,000 square feet here.
We certainly do not.
And so there are limits. But let me just suggest something from my totally uninformed point of view here. If I had a demand for payment for tax from the Whiskey Rebellion, that would be the kind of thing that would interest you, wouldn't it?
Oh, you better believe it.
Yeah.
We would dearly love to have that. We will be interpreting the Whiskey Rebellion, and as I think you know, our primary fundraiser is called Rebels in Rye,
right.
And it's an immersive theater piece all about the Whiskey Rebellion. We had enormous fun last year, and we will be repeating that this year on April the 8th.
Well, we're going to talk about that shameless promotion portion of the program.
Okay,
so the actual inventory of the museum obviously has to be carefully selected. Is there going to be change in this museum, or is it going to be static? I mean, once you've put all this in, is there going to be actually some change? See, one of the things that I sometimes get annoyed with museums, if I go see it in January and I come back the next September, the same stuff is there.
Right. Well, every museum has core exhibits that typically last for close to a decade, usually because they've cost hundreds of thousands of dollars and taken years to complete. But what we will do, what any museum really should be doing, is revolving or rotating exhibits, really pertaining to a specialized interest. So, for example, we might do a temporary exhibit on a child's life in Bedford, or Bedford rifles, or the upper class, or African Americans in Bedford. That would probably run for anywhere from 4 to 6 months or one season. We need to get the museum done as far as core exhibits, and then we'll turn our attention to that. I will add also that it's our plan to make the 18th century Fort Bedford part of the new exhibits, very keenly relying on technology and digital content. So we will be able to change that out. As technology evolves, we can change it out. We can put new programs in. And so every 1 year you might come and we have augmented reality program in which you talk to General Forbes. Perhaps the next year you come and we have augmented reality program in which you talk to Indian Eve.
That's hot, because everybody in Bedford tells me they're related to her.
Well, precisely. So maybe we'll have a genealogy seminar on Indian Eve. So we will do our best in coming years to make
the best part of that story, I understand, is that Indian Eve isn't even an Indian.
I believe that's correct. Yeah.
Okay, that's good.
Yeah, I'm just going to leave it there.
Okay. Our guest is Jennifer Ford. She is the curator of the Fort Bedford Museum, and we're having a great time talking to her in her alpaca shop. And by the way, we will throw in a shameless plug for this. The alpaca shop is located at 117 South Juliana Street, And it is one of the most extraordinary shops I've ever been in.
Oh, how dear.
I don't know much about alpacas. I've seen pictures of them. I never met a real alpaca until I came to Bedford. And so it's kind of interesting and neat, very unusual. So you should come in and look at that, too. The clothing in here is just fabulous. Jen, the whole idea, though, of going to a museum should be a little sense of wonder. My wife and I went to the Johnstown Flood Museum up in South Fork recently, and they have a rather dramatic display where a tree is sticking out of the wall, which is a photograph.
It's a true photograph,
tree was sticking out of a building after the flood.
Yeah.
So are you going to think like any dramatic things like that in Fort Bedford? Any plans for things like that?
Like a big set piece?
Yeah, or I don't know. Maybe, I don't know.
We don't have the space to do something huge and dramatic, especially in the blockhouse. Now, parenthetically, we do have that photograph in the back gallery, but it is just normal photograph size because we do have a couple of artifacts from the Johnstown flood in the back room.
And we can't forget that inside the museum, in the center there, there's this enormous flag, which appears to be very old. Tell us about that.
It is. It is most definitely a mid-18th century British flag. To the very best of our knowledge, and there is some controversy about this, but historians live to argue with each other. One of my favorite nouns of possession is a quarrel of scholars. But to the very best of our knowledge, this we have at the museum, the flag that was hanging in the commandant's office while Fort Bedford, the original Fort Bedford, was built during the French and Indian War. Took a long road trip in between when it was here in the 1800s, in the 1700s, and when it came back. But it is the premier piece of the museum and extremely valuable and very, very extraordinary. And when we design the last new section of the museum, it will come down from the rafters. It's quite literally hanging off the balcony rail right now. It will come down on the floor and be the centerpiece. We will probably even have it on a revolving turntable and specially illuminated. So when you walk into the blockhouse,
have some protection, this thing, if it's that old.
Oh, yeah. It's already in a huge archival grade case. It is enclosed and protected already.
I see.
And we've taken steps at the museum in the last few years to put in heating and air conditioning so that all of the artifacts are better protected than ever.
The climate control has got to have helped all this stuff in the area.
Yes.
Cold, damp weather is not good for anything, including people.
Definitely. Humidity is the great enemy of people and artifacts, and we're well on the way to getting the museum climate control.
Okay, it's time to move into our shameless promotion portion of the program, which I have just dubbed, I've written my little notes here, cocktails and cookies. So we'll start with the cocktails, or specifically whiskey.
Yeah.
Whiskey and rye. You did this last year for the first time.
We did. We had such a good time. Rebels and Rye. We did it last February out at the Omni Bedford Springs. And it was a party. We wanted to make it much more out of control and fun than the usual fundraiser. So we had actors dressed up and in character as Whiskey Rebellion era actual historical figures. And we had an auction. We tar and feathered the tax collector, who actually was District Attorney Bill Higgins. We tarred and feathered him. So we're going to do it again this year. There will be differences. First of all, it will be held in April instead of February. I think we tempted the winter gods enough last year. So Saturday, April the 8th at the Omni Bedford Springs is the 2017 Rebels and Rye. Things will be different in that there'll be much more food, much more just plain old eat as much as you can food instead of hors d'oeuvre type things. Mm-hmm. Many more lines to get whiskey so that people can easily and readily access.
But the problems you're talking about were good problems, because I don't think you expected the crowd you got.
You had
300 plus people there. I was there.
Yeah.
It was a little unruly, but I thought it was a crashing success.
It was. For the first year.
For ever having done this before.
Yeah.
But I think what made it so much fun was it did get a lot of control, especially the actors. Because everybody had a couple of belts and everybody was kind of having fun with this.
Right. We really just... There was fiddling and bagpiping and singing and dancing and screaming.
Well, that's number one. That's the 8th of April. And then this afternoon we have a really cool thing. And tell me about that with cookies.
It's the Colonial Cookie Christmas. This is the brainchild of the wonderful ladies who work in visitor services. They're the ones who greet people and show them around the museum. Cindy Browning, M. Morris, and Jade Coral. And these gals thought up, this will be the very last day the museum is open in 2016. And all day today, from 11 o'clock until 5 o'clock, we will have the museum decorated for Christmas. And at a minimum, we will have 1,200 to 1,500 home-baked cookies spread on tables throughout the museum. And the fun thing is, when you come to the cookie event, we give you a takeout bakery box. You can fill it up, and as long as you get the lid closed, that's $10 for a box full of homemade cookies. Folks from all over the county have been baking. I know of one particular gal who's already baked about 20 dozen cookies herself. Gosh. But, you know, lots of great flavors. And especially if you're having a Christmas party and don't want to bake yourself, or you just love Christmas cookies, come down to the museum.
Now, you mentioned Bill Higgins earlier. Did you dress him up as a cookie monster or anything like that?
No. Well, for Rebels and Rye, we had him dressed up as the whiskey tax collector. I think that the staff at the museum for cookie afternoon are going to be dressed up in colonial garb. Good. I don't know. That's the last I heard.
All right, great. All right, so it's cookies this afternoon. And tell me, what time again?
We will be open from 11 until 5, or when the cookies run out. We're hoping for such a blockbuster crowd that we have to shut the place down by 1.
Well, I saw the newspaper piece last week that you were in the front page talking about cookies.
Uh-huh.
And now, of course, we're talking about it here on the radio show, so I think you're going to do fine.
Oh, I hope so. And all proceeds will go to the museum and help us move forward with our exciting new plans.
Well, Jennifer Ford, we're out of time, but I just have had a blast here, as always. And thank you so much for taking the time to talk to us. Jennifer is the curator of the Fort Bedford Museum. And regardless of cookies or whiskey or any of those things, you got to get down to the museum. It really has been extraordinarily improved. If you've not been there with your children, you should go there. And it opens officially again when?
Next April. We haven't nailled down a date, but I expect probably the same weekend or the weekend after Rebels and Rye.
Well, hopefully all the snow will be melted. You'll be able to come next April. And, of course, you'll hear more about it here on the on the radio station about that.
Thank you so much.
Thank you very much. It's really great that you did this, and I wish you well.
Thank you.
Bedford County Speaks was presented this morning by Thomas Chevrolet Subaru on Route 220 in Bedford, saving you time, money, and worry for over 100 years. I look forward to joining you next time right here on News Talk 1310 WBFD. And until then, enjoy your weekend and enjoy your cookies at the Fort Bedford Museum. This is Lloyd Roach.
You have been listening to Bedford County Speaks. Listen each Saturday beginning at 8:30 to hear about the work, lives, and lifestyles in Bedford County. Bedford County Speaks is a presentation of the News and Public Affairs Department of News Talk 1310 WBFD. Thanks for listening.